Blog Talk Radio.
James Baltic here, Conservatives Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio. We are across the spectrum in a whole lot of places. We do a live show Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here at Patriot Nation. Plus, we have a pre-recorded version that we do for a number of other outlets. And those include, not to mention, we also do the Thursday night live show here is also done in a simulcast with the good folks over at News Without Filters and Anderson Media Enterprise. But we do it with the Talk America Radio Network. We do it with the Internet Conservative Radio Network. You can also hear us on WSTR Digital Broadcasting. And as far as Talk America Radio Network goes, I want to also say a special shout out to Talk WDDQ 92.1, WJHC Talk 107.5, couple of FM stations, and WLBB AM 1330. These stations are situated in the southern Georgia, northern Florida area in the Panhandle, and that's who they take care of down there. So, having said that, let me say this. You know, last week we talked about, I can't remember if it was Tuesday or Thursday, I think it was Tuesday. Dinesh D'Souza has a new book out called The Big Lie. And we talked last week, and as a matter of fact, I ran that on the first half of my Talk America show as well, because I think it's important to get this out. And this is stuff that I never really thought about. And when it comes to American history, of course, I'm old now, and the old steel cap is a little rusty at times, but from an American history standpoint, I used to be fairly well informed, and I was never aware of any of this stuff. And I've got some more stuff tonight. He released another excerpt, I guess, today, and this is The Big Lie is what the name of the book is. And last week, what we talked about was how Hitler derived policies against Europe, as well as against Jews from progressive leftist eugenic type policies and the thinking that was all the rage back in the day of Margaret Sanger. So we're talking like from the turn of the century in the 1920s and 1930s. So we talked about that, and we talked about now and think about this. All right? We talked about the similarities in the things Hitler saw that he could expound on the concepts and the tactics, legal tactics that he could use in his plans for conquest and purification. Well, in the 1930s, who was president of the United States? Franklin Delano Roosevelt was president of the United States in 1932, all the way up into the Second World War. He died in 1944. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was president of the United States. That's right. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a progressive Democrat. He wrote a book at that time. And the name of the book, Roosevelt, that is, wrote a book called Leading Forward. And it was critiqued, you know, all around the world. And one of the critiques said, many passages in President Roosevelt's book could have been written by a National Socialist. One can assume he feels considerable affinity with the National Socialist philosophy. The newspaper that ran this critique was a Nazi newspaper called the Volkischer Beobachter, and it was in a review of this book. Now let's fast forward to today and this time, when the left media routinely compare President Trump and the rest of us to fascists. This school is getting ready to start, man. It's August 8th. Some places it's already started. Some counties here in the state it's already started. And I'm sure it's probably started in other places even earlier, and I think that's a sin. I think that's a shame. But anyway, school is going to be starting back. I go back for a couple of the kid-free days in some in services and stuff starting Thursday. And then I think Tuesday next week the kids start. And it's going to be Katie bar the doors. The school that I work at is under massive renovation, and additions are being put on it. And it's just... we got a bunch of new kids, don't know where they're going. We got a bunch of kids that aren't going to be really sure because it's not going to look anything like it looked when they were here last year. And it's just going to be a crazy. Anyway, speaking of school, let's get back to this. And history, right? This is a secret history. And this secret history is not going to be secret much longer because this book has taken off. This book, Dinesh D'Souza. Here's this secret history. What I just read, a book review in a Nazi newspaper praising Franklin Delano Roosevelt for his National Socialist views. Okay? FDR. Well, how come we didn't know about this before? I don't know. I just found out about it today. I am as shocked and appalled as anybody else, I can promise you. But the reason... and Dinesh D'Souza is going to break it down. I'm going to share this with you. The reason for this concealment project is to cover up the sins of progressive icon Franklin Roosevelt and of American progressivism more generally. What's being reported in these excerpts from this book it's the left's early romance, and the bloom is not off that rose yet. The left's early romance with fascism and National Socialism. It's a major embarrassment in terms of future prospects for the left. How can they claim to be the party of progress in all things good and true and beautiful when the record shows historical documented fact shows that they were in bed with Mussolini and to a lesser extent Adolf? So this article takes a look at President Franklin Roosevelt's enthusiasm for Mussolini. Now, remember, Mussolini was on Hitler's side during World War II. We won that one, by the way, which was not unique to Roosevelt. There were a lot of fans of Mussolini in the American progressives because they looked at the model of Italian fascism as a model for America. Some on the left even looked to leadership Hitler, and we talked about that last Tuesday. And the enthusiasm here, and we talked about this last Tuesday, the enthusiasm was reciprocal. The American progressive left loved Mussolini and Hitler. Hitler and Mussolini praised FDR and saw the progressive New Deal as at least a partial realization of the ideals of both fascism and National Socialism. Now, let's go ahead and talk about this from the get-go. FDR had no affection, really, at all, for Adolf Hitler, but he did like Mussolini. In a letter to journalist John Lawrence, a Mussolini admirer, FDR confessed, "I don't mind telling you, in confidence, that I am keeping in fairly close touch with that admirable Italian gentleman." In June of 1933, FDR wrote his Italian ambassador, Breckinridge Long, another Mussolini admirer, regarding the fascist despot. "Seems to be no question he's really interested in what we're doing. I am much interested and deeply impressed by what he has accomplished and by his evidenced honest purpose in restoring Italy." From Roosevelt's point of view, Mussolini had gotten an earlier start in expanding state power in a way Roosevelt himself intended. Italy under Il Duce seemed to have moved further down that progressive road than America, so FDR urged leading members of his brain trust to visit Italy and study Mussolini's fascist policies to see which of them could be integrated into the New Deal. Franklin Dam Delano Roosevelt, you heard me. Rexford Tugwell, God, what a name, one of FDR's closest advisors, returned from Italy with the observation that Mussolini certainly has the same people opposed to him as FDR has, even though he seems to have made enormous progress. Tugwell was especially impressed by how the Italian fascists were able to override political and press opposition and get things done. Tugwell quoted favorably from the 1927 Charter of Italian Fascism, the Carta del Lavoro, which seems to have impressed him way more than the American Constitution. Fascism, he concluded. This is Rex Tugwell, Roosevelt's best buddy. "Fascism," he concluded, "is the cleanest, neatest, most efficiently operating piece of social machinery I have ever seen. It makes me envious." This sycophantic devotion to fascism, strange as it looks today, was at the time characteristic of the way that leading leftists felt about Mussolini, both in Europe and here in the United States. In England, the Fabian socialist George Bernard Shaw praised Mussolini for actually implementing socialist ideals. In 1932, the utopian leftist novelist H.G. Wells, H.G. Wells is the guy responsible for The Time Machine, The Invisible Man, The War of the Worlds. Great writer. But he was a utopian left wing guy. He said he actually called for a liberal fascism in the West, emphasizing the need for, no joke, enlightened Nazis. Novelist Gertrude Stein insisted as late as 1937 that the most deserving candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize was Adolf Hitler. Roosevelt, people. And it wasn't just FDR and his, you know, inner circle. The American left in general was just as crazy as Roosevelt and his crew were about Italian fascism. Left-wing journalist Ida Tarbell interviewed Mussolini in 1926 from McCall's magazine and returned effusive with praise. Leftist muckraker Lincoln Steffens, who famously said of the Soviet Union, "I have seen the future and it works." Also praised Mussolini for his leftist sympathies, noting rapturously that God has formed Mussolini out of the rib of Italy. Democrats. Progressive writer Horace Callan, an early champion of multiculturalism, said that it was a great mistake to judge fascism as merely tyrannical, noting that it was an experiment in social justice. Heard that word before? Not unlike the communist revolution. Both systems, he said, had given citizens a sense of unity, and we should approach them with patience and judge them only by their results. 28 million people dead. I got a judgment. For progressive historian Charles Beard, who's known for his attacks on the American founders as selfish landed capitalists, Mussolini's heavy-handedness was one of his positive traits. Beard admired the fascist dictator for bringing out by force of the state the most compact and unified organization of capitalists and laborers the world had ever seen. Force of the state. You know, put the state, get guns, right? Herbert Crowley, editor of the New Republic, celebrated Mussolini for arousing in a whole nation an increased moral energy and subordinating the citizens to a deeply felt common purpose. Another New Republic editor, George Sewell, praised the New Deal for its kinship to Mussolini's policy. We are trying out the economics of fascism, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In 1934, leftist economist William Pepperell journeyed from his home base of Columbia University to the International Congress on Philosophy in Prague, where he announced the name Fabian Fascism to describe the New Deal, which he considered a creative hybrid of socialism and fascism. A few years later, 1938, when a journalist visited Governor Philip Lafayette, he found that this founder of the Wisconsin Progressive Party had two framed photographs in his office, Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis and Benito Mussolini. He admitted, Lafayette did, that these were his two personal heroes. Some on the left went even further than that and praised Nazism. The progressive African-American scholar W.E.B. Du Bois said Hitler's dictatorship was absolutely necessary to get the state in order. In 1937, he wrote, "There's today, in some respects, more democracy in Germany than there has been in years past." Du Bois even contrasted American racism, which he considered irrational, with Nazi antisemitism, which he said was based on reasoned prejudice or economic fear. Now, this was what Americans, the American left, the American progressive left, both inside and outside Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration, and this is what they thought about fascists and Nazis. But what did the fascists and the Nazis think about them? With Mussolini's review of FDR's book, Looking Forward, FDR's attempt to make the whole economy work for the common good, Mussolini commented, might recall the basis of fascist corporatism. Indeed, FDR's whole approach resembles that of fascism. When journalist Irving Cobb visited Mussolini in 1936, said to him, "You know, Your Excellency, what a great many Americans call you. They call you the Italian Roosevelt." Mussolini was thrilled. "For that," he replied, "I am very glad, proud. Roosevelt, I greatly admired." Mussolini clenched his fist and said Roosevelt had strength. He had the will to do what he thought should be done. Here is Benito Mussolini praising Franklin Delano Roosevelt basically for being like him, a political strongman. In Germany, the Nazi press also had positive things to say about FDR. On May 11, 1933, the Nazi newspaper Volkischer Beobachter, in an article titled "Roosevelt's Dictatorial Recovery Measures," praised Roosevelt for carrying out experiments that are bold. "We too fear only the possibility that they fail. We too, as German National Socialists, are looking towards America." In this review of Roosevelt's book, the Fischer Beobachter concluded that while maintaining a fictional appearance of democracy, in reality, Roosevelt's fundamental political course is thoroughly inflected by a strong national socialism. On June 21st, 1934, that same newspaper noted Roosevelt's adoption of national socialist strain of thought in his economic and social policies and compared his leadership style with Hitler's own dictatorial bedside manner. Do you guys know anything about this? I didn't know anything about this till today. I did not know that, as Johnny Carson used to say. Hitler himself, a correspondent for the New York Times, he viewed FDR traveling down the same path as himself. He says, "I have sympathy for Roosevelt, because he marches straight toward his objectives over Congress and lobbies bureaucracy. Hitler, like Mussolini, viewed FDR as what? A fellow dictator. Hitler added that he was the sole leader in Europe who had a genuine understanding of the methods and motives of President Roosevelt. Hitler also told FDR's German ambassador, William Dodd, that FDR's insistence that American citizens place the common good above their own personal good is also the quintessence of the German state philosophy, which finds its expression in the slogan, "The public will transcends the interest of the individual." Even as late as 1938, William Dodd's successor, Hugh Wilson, reported to FDR that Hitler remained a fan. Hitler said he had watched with interest the methods which you, Mr. President, have been attempting to adopt for the United States in facing some of the problems which were similar to the problems he faced when he assumed office. Now, in light of all this, it cannot be assumed that FDR's willingness to go to war with Hitler and Mussolini, and he was willing to go to war with, somehow proves that progressives and fascists were ideological opposites. No. In reality, progressivism, fascism, and communism were the three great collectivist movements of the 20th century. All three were hostile to free market capitalism. All three sought to subordinate individual rights to the centralized power of the state. When FDR went to war with Hitler and Mussolini, these clashes were, this was an internal feud. To the rest of us, yeah, it was a battle for world domination. But the Roosevelt and Hitler and Mussolini, this was just an internecine squabble, or an internecine squabble. Versus Protestant, Sunni versus Shia. Godzilla versus King Kong. When one sees the affinities between FDR and the progressives on the one hand and Italian and German fascism on the other, we can see that to some degree the great wars of the second part of the century, World War II and the Cold War, were merely a contest to determine which type of collectivism would prevail. Wasn't fascism. Although fascism's making a little bit of a comeback with the progressive left, it wasn't Nazism. Communism. Progressivism. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A huge tip of the hat. And like I said, when it comes to this sort of thing, from a historical standpoint, I'm usually pretty much up to speed. But these two articles that I shared with you last week and this week, now, but if you stop and think about it, especially expounding on what we talked about last week, with Hitler looking at how did the Americans deal with this, and then how did American Democrats deal with this? What did the Democrats do to the American Indian? Well, they cut them down to a fraction on reservations where they could keep an eye on. You know what I mean? Andrew Jackson Democrats, they have a trail of tears with Seminole Indians moving to the reservations. It was America's baton death march. Jacksonian Democrats did that. That's what Hitler looked at when he was trying to figure out how to deal with Jews. Jim Crow laws. Democrat Jim Crow laws after the Civil War and beginning of the 20th century. That was the legislative arm, the legal arm, and the legal examples that Hitler used to form the Nuremberg Laws of 1935, which dealt with discriminatory practices against Jews in Germany. Sexual purity, the eugenics movement, Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood. Hitler was all in favor of sterilizing those people or eliminating completely those people who wouldn't contribute. You know, or what was it? A threat to the natural stock. That's how he said it. I am dry as dust. I don't know what the deal is with this. I've been dry for the last couple of days. Plus, all this talking makes a man thirsty. We're down to the bottom of the hour. So here's what we're going to do. We're gonna play some music. And we will be back with more of ACP right after our brief musical interlude. It is my understanding our good buddy Scott Kesterson is going to be with us at the bottom of the hour. All sad news today. Ladies and gentlemen, Glenn Campbell passed away a few hours ago. Been battling with Alzheimer's for a few years now. He's gone on to his reward, and it's the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour up there in crossover country heaven. We'll be back right after this.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some line. That keeps you in the back road by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on their columns now that bind me, or something that somebody said because they thought we'd fit together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing or forgiving when I walk along some railroad track and find that you're moving on the back road by the rivers of my memory, and for hours you're just gentle on my mind. Though the wheat fields and the clotheslines and the junkyards and the highways come between us, and some other woman's crying to her mother 'cause she turned and I was gone, I still might run in silence, tears of joy might stain my face, and a summer sun might burn me till I'm blind. But not to where I cannot see you walking on the back road by the rivers flowing gentle on my mind. I dip my cup of soup back from a gurgling, crackling cauldron in some train yard. My beard a roughening coal pile and a dirty hat full low across my face. Through cupped hands round the tin can, I pretend to hold you to my breast and find that you're waiting from the back road by the rivers of my memory, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
Everybody's gone away. Said they're moving to L.A. There's not a soul I know around. Everybody's leaving town. Some caught a freight, some caught a plane. Sunshine, leave the rain. They said this town will waste your time. the time Charlie's got the blues. The time Charlie's got the blues. You know my heart keeps telling me you're not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try and settle down, but everybody's leaving town. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time Charlie's got the blues. Good time Charlie's got the blues. Good time, Charlie got the blues.
And welcome back. A conservative's perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network at Blog Talk. Also, a couple different places you can find us. Talk America Radio, you can find us there. You can also find us on the Internet Conservative Radio Network, ICRN. WSTR Digital Broadcasting. Talk WDDQ 92.1 is also Talk America Radio affiliate. Talk 107.5 FM Talk. News Talk, WLBB M1330. All those in the southern Georgia, northern Florida area, taking good care of those people down there. Giving their, and also, not to mention, you can also find, last but by no means least, you can find ACP with its weekly leavings over on the American Brand page over here at Facebook. And speaking of the American Brand, our friend Scott Kesterson is with us right now. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Hey, James, what's going on? How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you very much. How was it at Tintina today?
It was awesome. So you heard that, huh? That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm keeping my eye on you, dude. Yeah. I'm watching.
Yeah, so hey, I'll tell you, this morning it was kind of a crazy morning because I was over camping at the local campground, and this morning starts, I get up with plenty of time. You know, I get up at 5:30. I'm like, oh, I got plenty of time. The tour starts at 9. Well, I'm making coffee, and up comes this guy from Saskatchewan, and he's there with his family. Of course, he's a coal miner, and we start talking at length and discover, you know, how much in common that they're facing the same environmental crazies that that we are down here. And then as he leaves, an Air Force veteran walks up, and we start talking, and he's just loving the American Brand. So I'm heading back over there tonight. I'm going to have some chats with both of them if they're still there. It's good. But I spent the whole day today with the guy who set up the company, Tatina Resources, Jerry, and incredible story. I mean, Jerry literally grew up on the same area of land with his family's farm, a ranch, and has spent years studying the geology, and was actually hired at one point as a master's student to look at the geology in the same area. And now, because all these other companies passed it by, Jerry is responsible for the one. He's the guy who has found the this was the geologist and obviously founder of the company who found this reserve of copper up here, which is the purest copper almost in the world. And then when they finally decided to go forward with it, it was the ranchers that reached out to him that said, Jerry, we want you to come in and tell us how to do this. We want you to lead the project. So it's just an amazing story of local. You know, local ranchers really supporting a mining project, and a mining project that has started with somebody who came from the local area. It's incredible.
I was getting a drink there. Well, so they showed you around the place, right? Did you get to take the tour?
Oh yeah, I did. And I'll tell you, to see the, you know, they've got a 3D model printed out in their facility. Anybody that, I mean, I know it's a long ways out of the way, but if, I'm just telling anybody out there that if you're traveling up to White Sulphur Springs, and it's just north of Bozeman, south of Great Falls in Montana, you want to stop into Tintina Resources to take a look at their whole layout and what they're doing. It's state of the art. They've got a great 3D model. They do officially, they do tours once a month. This was a special tour that I got invited in on. But the whole lay of the land is incredible. I think what's most amazing is that this thing is going to be tunneling down to like 1,100 feet, 1,500 feet at some point underground. But it's going to be going underneath the existing ranch houses. The ranchers are still going to be able to do all their ranching out there. Their environmental stuff with the that they're doing to protect their environment is literally off the charts. It's a state-of-the-art project with every single aspect of environmental protection and mining mixed together. And it's a situation where this is a true conservative value project, where it's a demonstration of love for land and use of resources at the same time. And it says a lot for ranchers to get behind it and go, we want this thing to happen, right?
Yeah, you would think so, because that's, you know, they got to have that grazing land, and if they thought that this was going to be something that interfered or caused harm to it, they wouldn't have anything. They wouldn't have anything to do with it. What, you know, we've talked about the next thing I'm gonna ask you about. We've already talked about before, but is it, in terms of the environmentalist resistance at this point, is it mostly just noise, or are they starting to establish a presence? Are they starting to beat on the drums up there? What's going on from that standpoint?
Well, they're heading into their EIS, which is their environmental impact study, and once they get through with that, they expect to be permitted. Right now, they've had some rumblings. Most of it's coming out of Missoula. Missoula is the University of Montana was also, just so you know, they were the ones that were training the activists to go up and protest the Keystone Pipeline. So you have a radical incubator at taxpayer funding, I want to add. Up in Missoula, Montana, like most of our universities are these days. And so there's a number of organizations that have sprung off of Missoula that are, some are getting funding from the Kennedy Foundation, some are getting funding from other private entities, but they're definitely ramping up for a fight. The type of fight that they're expecting, and it's going to take resources to fight it, and that's why I keep pushing to build the American brand, is it's going to be the legal battle. They're going to try to tie them up in court. They're going to try to drain the company's resources down so they can't afford to move forward. They're going to probably try to put an injunction on the project, anything they can do to try to stop it. And the worst part about it is Montana falls under the control of the Ninth Circuit. So if we go to a federal court level, where it goes to the Ninth Circuit, right?
Unreal.
The strategies that and the American brand and we've been developing are based, you know, obviously on a lot of influence stuff, but it's going to be some direct action influence stuff against the environmentalists, and it has to be. I mean, it's resources dependent, but I have no bones in saying that we're going to pull together a legal team, and we're going to fight them with civil suits. We're going to support the ranchers that want to fight anybody that wants to fight trespassing. We're going to support them. We're going to have. And then we're going to need people. We're going to need resources of people. And we're going to need resources of finances. And the bottom line, James, is that this is significant. This is the only new non-coal mine in the country that's privately funded on private property. If they succeed in closing this down and stopping this project from going forward, there will never be another mine for resources in our lifetime in the United States. And what that guarantees is those resources will be sold off most likely to a foreign interest, and that foreign interest will most likely be China.
Great. Coal to China, uranium to Russia.
Right. So, I mean, this is a fight for America. And this is it's one place here in White Sulphur Springs that, until I got up here, and be quite frank, no one really knew about outside of the region of Montana. And this has to be a national issue. We've got to elevate this thing up and let everybody in, you know, I understand conservatives I respect the fact conservatives are cautious to get behind things because they've seen a lot of things come and go. But we need to throw some caution to the wind here, because the point is that this is truly a fight. I mean, I'm dug into it. My team's dug into it. You're investing into it. I mean, these are things that people need to get behind, and that means anywhere from just reaching out and giving moral support, following their Facebook page for Tatina Resources Black Butte Mine Project, to letting them know you're there. And when the time comes, it's going to mean, like, if we go do GoFundMe pages or we do resources, we need donations, people have got to start understanding these are the sorts of fights. This is where you put your money, because they count. This mine represents 240 jobs to this local community. It represents approximately 140 subcontractor jobs. It represents 14 years to 20 years of employment. This thing is a transformational moment for this community. You're talking about solid, good-paying jobs. That's 240 families. They expect to have about 100 to 120 of those jobs directly in this community of 960. So that's a huge impact, plus the surrounding communities that will be impacted. It's there is a rule in Montana that when they start doing something like this, the mining company has to forward pay their taxes into the county, so the county can start building out infrastructure in the town so that they can anticipate or offset some of the surge of people. It's a really good idea. So that if once this gets once they break ground on this, there's going to be an immediate inject of, you know, probably several million dollars into the county just to help build infrastructure in the area of White Sulphur Springs and the surrounding area. I mean, all of that is positive. It's American jobs. It's using American resources. Copper anymore is becoming a strategic resource for the United States. It's just going to be a new copper mine. And on top of it, there are other minerals in the ground that they're already looking at accessing, some of which are rare earth minerals that they may be able to tap into. All of this has the opportunity of really being a game changer for, you know, a battle standard, so to speak, for Red State to look at. It's a big victory that then can be used to springboard off to create other victories around the country in small towns and to re-energize some of our resource-based industries. But if they fail, then the environmentalists win. It is a victory across the board in the United States. You will never see another privately funded mine strike up in this country in our lifetime, guaranteed. And I'm being told that by these folks that are being told that by investors. That's how critical a project this is.
Well, you know, speaking of positive things, I was on the road earlier this afternoon and was listening. I'm usually a satellite radio guy, but the vehicle I was in didn't have satellite radio, and I was just listening to some AM talk. And it was a local AM station, and an ad came on, a radio ad for a coal mine operation that's getting ready to open. I can't remember the name of it. It was something resources, American Resources, something like that. Anyway, and they were talking about this sweet, no premium medical package. They had this massive, you know, they were looking for experienced miners. They were looking for experienced coal people. And I can't remember, honest to God, I can't remember the last time I heard, you know, of a coal company here in the state taking radio time to get the word out that they're hiring. And the first thing I thought, and we've talked about this, the first thing I thought was, man, I hope there's enough dudes that aren't on drugs that can get those jobs and bring this thing to life.
I hope so too. You know, the part of this is, and you know, you and I have had these conversations. I'm openly pretty critical of the giving up, but at the same time, part of the giving up is isolationism, and it's about not having any hope. Obviously, what we're talking about constantly in the American brand, and what you and I are talking about, is linkage to build connectivity so you don't feel isolated. So these communities aren't feeling like they're fighting the fight alone, because that's the American brand, is to unify and to build a unified front to fight back. And then the other component of that is the idea that building hope with small victories. And when I say small victories, this one here is a significant project by dollar-wise. It's about $50 million roughly, and it'll be a lot more. But it's by comparison to an ExxonMobil or something like that, it's a small project. But nonetheless, this is a company that if we can get behind them to help them through that next leg where it's going to be the legal fight, the protesters, all that other crap that we just need to have no tolerance for and shouldn't have any tolerance for, and help them be successful. It is a victory that everybody in Red State can own. And let me tell you, they are so excited about just when I've laid out who's telling, you know, I've talked about your radio station, I've talked about Mark's radio station, I've talked about the amazing Doc Green's radio station, I've talked about what we're doing on the American brand. I linked up with somebody last night who's been, he's a pastor out of LA who's been linking off of Mark's show, who is, we talked afterwards. He wants to get behind it. He's got an incredible reach of people that have small blogs and small Facebook pages. He's been linking them together. We're getting a movement. And it's, we've got time, but it's going to be, we have got to keep the pressure on this to give these folks the backing because they are thrilled. I mean, she was telling Nancy, who's a vice president of communication, was telling me today, she's like, Scott, we're getting all sorts of new hits. She said, the only person that must be coming from is you because we're getting people from all over the country and we're starting to get veterans lining up behind us. And I'm like, good. That means we're starting to make some impact and we need to keep the pressure on because they need to know that they've got huge support about this nationally, because when the environmentalists come, they come hard and heavy, and they do have funding. And I don't want to be caught flat-footed. I want to knock them back in the teeth hard. And I've got the strategies and the ability to do it, the techniques to do it. And we will do it, and we will be vicious, and we will win. But it's going to take resources, and it's going to take the constant push from us to get Red State to realize that this is an important fight for everybody. This isn't just White Sulphur Springs. This represents small-town America. Carte blanche.
And you know, here's the thing, to me it's kind of frustrating. I'm going to go ahead and call them out on it. Not that they're going to, you know, not that anybody's, but if people, friends of Cole, have not been particularly friendly to the American brand. They haven't. Huh. They haven't. No, I finally got a receptionist. I talked to a receptionist after, I don't know, three or four different times of trying to make an outreach to these people and leaving messages. I've had absolutely no response whatsoever, and I'm remarkably disappointed in this because I thought this was going to be – I thought this was – you know, these were the kind of people who were looking to see coal mining put in as positive light as possible. And nothing from these clowns. They are ashamed of themselves. And we ought to talk about it when we get to that point.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm making some reach out to, there's a group called Friends of Coal Strip, because Coal Strip is an open pit coal strip mine or coal mine down in Coal Strip, Montana. They were just bought out by a hydroelectric plant out of Seattle, the hydroelectric power company out of Seattle. And that company has already negotiated a closure of Coal Strip 1 and 2. Or 2 and 3, whenever two of the mines, they've already negotiated with the environmentalists to close two of those facilities down. And so there's, you know, I'm gonna make my inroads into coal. And if the Friends of Coal up in West Virginia don't want to reach out, it's gonna get pretty embarrassing when we're sitting here on the front edge of the fight of mining, and you're not getting a reach out. And I'm not gonna make any bones about it. I'm all about forgive and forget, but at the same time, this is no more time to play games. It's time to get off the seat and start getting behind this stuff. This is an opportunity right now not to hobble in and just say, well, we're just coal. I have a sense that that's part of what's going on, because when we're talking to Montana, all the mining companies up here tend to support one another. But my experience on the East Coast is everybody kind of stays in their own little vertical. You know, we're coal. We're not going to talk to anybody else in energy. I ran into this once before when I did some consulting with coal, and I was pulling my hair out. The old-time thinking, which is one of the other issues about coal, is they have a lot of older folks in there and old-time thinking. You got to throw that to the side. This is a fight for America, and mining is part of America's history. And if you aren't going to get behind it and be with it, then I don't know what to say. But I am going to call coal out on one thing, and I'm going to make it clear. Coal is partly responsible for this damn environmental problem, and they know it. And maybe that's part of the problem, because they know that they were the ones that funded the protesters against nuclear, okay? And they were a big part of that funding in the 70s. So time to make up for your sins. I'm sorry, but it is time to start coming to the table and start helping other mining companies across this country. And small mining operations like this are not an insignificant issue. And coal has the clout to help that, and we need to get them behind. And they need to come off the table and start helping.
Yeah, it kind of pissed me off. a little bit. I have much higher expectations for these guys. I mean, there's no enthusiasm at all. It's just like an echo.
Well, have you, I just say take it up the chain, James. I mean, whatever it takes to get it going.
And that's my plan B. We're going to work on it. So, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with our friend Scott Kesterson and the American brand. What else is going on besides Tintina out there? What's been happening?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I'm on the, at this point, I have, since we last talked, I mean, I've launched the second phase of this, which is all bike packing, and I'm doing the Lewis and Clark Trail East bike packing. And that, I've now done, spent about 50 miles on back country roads, hard gravel roads, going through some of the old ghost towns and homesteads. And it arrived up here into White Sulphur Springs. So that's been pretty much my week since I last talked to you. I think what's most important is that when I went through a town called Modlo, which was it's a ghost town now. It was built around a rail line, which was the cutting edge technology at the time. But it's an echo and a memory of what could become of all of our small towns if we don't keep trying to push for innovation and encourage youth to come back and work to help innovate businesses locally. I mean, this is a very complex fight, but Modlo literally was a booming little community on the transcontinental rail line. And when that line was closed down, Modlo struggled for about a year or two, and then it just vanished. And it was a booming little community. It has a nice little old school that's still there. It had a hotel, it had a train station. It had quite a bit. I mean, hotel is indicative of a town that was doing okay. And
right now,
It's been enveloped by the Turner Ranch, by Ted Turner, who owns the CA Ranch down there. And it's nothing but just private land and with signs that remind you about every 10 feet, stay off our land. So it's, you know, that's Turner and Company. What can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's really what we're looking at and why people need to understand that the small town fight is not a small fight. Small towns start to implode and there's nothing to catch them in free fall. And we're not seeing the innovation and there's no more time for conservative America to sit on the couch. And I'm not accusing anybody in particular. I'm just saying that the attitude has been kind of ingrained that we vote for a president and then we go back to work. We don't have those options anymore. We have got to be on the front line, because this generation, our generation, has the knowledge of past and future and vision of the future to understand how to lead the youth and educate them enough to know how to fight forward. But if we give up, this youth is going to be handed a basket full of shit. And quite frankly, they won't know what to do with it. And understandably, we have got to help them along to lead the way, to give them the example of what they're fighting for, and we need to get them out and so that they know where to go. I mean, that's the same with, like, Team Ground Zero, why it's so important, you know. But that's kind of where we're at.
62 million people voted for Donald Trump, not the Republican Party. They voted because, as you know, like you've said so many times, that I've started ripping you off, man. But, you know, 62 million people voted for Donald Trump. They didn't vote for the Republican Party. They voted for this guy's vision in terms of the course correction for this country. And you're right, we do. It's almost like the Super Bowl. You know, you pick a side, and then you root for them, and there's a lot of hype, and there's a lot of brouhaha. And finally, the big day comes, bang. One guy wins, one guy doesn't, and then you're right, then we go back to work. And some guys go back to work feeling pretty good about things. Other guys go back to work not feeling good about things. And we have to – the bystanding days are over, like Gregory Peck told David Niven in The Guns Are Now Thrown. You know, we're in it now, up to our necks, and we've got to
– Yes.
We got to do it.
Yeah, we absolutely do. I mean, that's absolutely true. So, I mean, we've got to stay on top of this, and it's – we are the generation to win or lose it, and that's just quite frankly. I mean – whether people like that or not, you know, you can tell me I'm full of poo and I'm going to tell you I'm not. I mean, I can show it to you. I mean, the bottom line is we are the generation to win or lose it. And it's time to, you know, I said in my program last night, refit. You've got to refit the focus on this thing. And we've got to get into the idea that we're now, if we want this country and we want our country for our kids and our grandkids and the generations beyond that, it is time to dig in and start really
committing every single day, committing some act every single day for your country first, and then yourself and your family. That has to happen. And when we get that mentality back into where we're every single day, we're thinking of what can I do something for my country? That's revitalizing the American spirit. Citizenship to me is just a given. Marrying an American is an honor and it's an earned right. And part of that earned right is every single day doing something for your country, which is bigger than you and bigger than your family.
Nationalism. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Scott Kesterson, our buddy from President Leading Light behind the American brand. And you can find him with Expedition Red and what's going on Facebook. You can also find it at theamericanbrand.org. That's his site. But like I said, he has a Facebook presence by the same name. What's going to be happening in the days to come before we talk on Thursday? What's going to be happening tomorrow?
So I'm heading out tomorrow. I'm gonna go grab my campsite tonight, and I'm gonna head out tomorrow. I'm gonna be heading east. I'm heading out towards Billings, and then down towards Pompey's Pillar. I assume by next week I'll be kind of I'm north of the Lewis and Clark Trail at this point. I took a kind of a northern route to go through White Sulphur Springs. It's also the territory where my grandfather used to break broncs. He was a bronc rider and used to break horses for the ranchers up here. So it's kind of got some sentimental part to me. But I'm going to be heading
awesome.
Down towards Billings and then into Pompey's Pillar and out towards Custer, which is where my grandparents' house was and where my dad grew up and where I spent a lot of my youth. And then on up towards, Forsyth, and then on up towards Williston, North Dakota. I'm doing about 50 miles, 40 to 50 miles a day. That varies. I mean, when I'm on gravel road, I'm lucky if I do 16 or 20. But I suspect by next week I'll be, 5 days down the road, 250 miles or so from where I'm at now, which will put me somewhere past Billings, heading towards Custer. And it's just the same thing of just meeting these small towns, kind of seeing the difference of what's going on, and continuing to tell a story about America and seeing what comes our way.
Okay, well, listen, we're about out of time. If you want to close things out and let everybody know where and at what time they can find your videos on Facebook and YouTube.
All right. Well, thanks, James. I run a program twice a day on Facebook, and the Facebook page is The American Brand. 10 a.m. Eastern is Morning Coffee, and 9 p.m. Eastern is The American Brand. Morning Coffee is what kind of politics and what goes on behind the headlines, and the evening is a lot of discussion about values in small towns. You can also find us on YouTube with additional programming on the YouTube channel of The American Brand channel, and there's additional stories up there, and there's more populating each day. You can find us on Twitter at Expedition Red with an XPED and American Brand TV on Instagram. So follow us, and if you want to go to our homepage, read about what we're doing, support us with the Take Action button, you'll find us at theamericanbrand.org, at theamericanbrand.org. And as James said, 62 million people voted for Donald Trump. They didn't vote for a party. They voted for a man with a vision to reset us to faith, values, jobs, in America first, and constitutionality. And our vision is to unify those 62 million people to support small town and rural America with a small donation to make us the most powerful political and education outreach organization dedicated to small town, rural America, and small business.
Let's make George Soros choke on it, okay? 62 million people, 10 bucks a pop, 620 million people. That's a lot of scratch, and it can get a lot of good things done. Scott, we're down to the last 15 seconds. I want to thank you for being with us. Scott Kesterson, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you guys on Thursday. Scott, be safe out there, and we'll be taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. See you Thursday.
All right. Thanks, James. Out for now.
All right, man.